Well, in the last unit, we talked about how we can create multiple states in your program. So you can have a starting state and a ruled state and so on. We built an adventure game, or started to, where we have multiple states. We went through all that, right? Now what we want to do is start talking about how to get more sophisticated input and output from your programs. Not real sophisticated, but at least text-style input. The example I want to work towards is this math tutorial. I'm sorry, it's educational, but we'll try to avoid that in the future. What kind of problem do you want to do? And then you can choose from a number of different kinds of math problems. Woohoo! Addition. I click on addition, and it gives me an addition problem. Okay, 8 plus 9 equals, take off your shoes, work with your toes. What do we get? 17. Oh, whew, we got that one right. Great job, score 1 out of 1. 3 plus 10, 13. Yes, it should be cleared, but I'm not going to worry about it today. Let's get one wrong. 3 plus 2 is 13. Wrong, 66%. We'll get one more right. Huh? Yeah, I know. I was ignoring that. 4 plus 2 is 6. Great job. 3 out of 4 is 75%. Let's keep going. Let's do one more. 9 plus 5 is 14. 80%. Woohoo, I'm a happy guy. At least, you know, it's a B minus. I'll go with it. Back, it takes me back to the original place where I can choose subtraction, multiplication, division. All of those problems were randomly generated for me. So if you have small children and you want to make math quizzes to make their lives miserable, you can do that. But think about this. Think about how I created random numbers for addition. 3 plus 5, right? Get a random number 0 to 10, another random number 0 to 10, add them up. But what about division? Could I do that the same way? Worse than that, cutting out 0, there's other things to worry about, right? You don't want to divide by 0 unless you want your child's head to explode. We don't want to deal with rounding. What a mess, you know? In third grade, when they start doing division, you don't give them remainders yet. You don't give them fractional values yet, because that'll, you know, mess with their poor little heads. Towards the end of third grade you do, because you like to watch them get confused. So somehow I have to think through that. Somehow I have to think about how to create a system that's going to do all this. Two main ways. Pre-store all the questions in, randomly generate them with a set of rules that will make sure that I have values within a legal set of responses. Does that sort of make sense? That's one of the things we got to deal with. Another thing we got to deal with is that here I've got text that's just a label. It's just sitting there. Here I've got text that I can type in. The user can select it, and they can type stuff into there. Now, I can type anything in there. It'll say we is not right. I've also got one more kind of text that doesn't look like anything special, but it is. And that is, this text right here is selectable. That means it's been changed by the program, not by the user. The user can't change it, but the user can select it. The program can change it. There's other text that nothing can change. The program can't change it. The user can't change it. It's just there. So there appears to be three different kinds of text available in Flash, and there are. So understanding how those three different kinds of text work and the kinds of things you can do with them is critically important. Does that make sense? That's today's lesson. How do we deal with text? How do we get back to this math game and do some interesting things? How many problems could we do? 5 problems per set, right? 4 sets of problems, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. How many frames do you expect to see? 20. Good. Wrong. 4. I think. 3. Wow. And the code is surprisingly small. There's actually not that much code. Now, we're not going to worry about it yet. We'll come back to it. But we'll also talk about how you think about designing a program like this to make the code as small as possible and reusable as possible so that you're not doing extra work and you're not making it harder for yourself to do work. Most people would do 20 frames for this. That's a mistake. That's it, yeah. If you can avoid it, you need to, and you can certainly avoid it here. Because that makes your code brittle. It's harder to change. And that's exactly what you don't want to do. You want to design your code from the beginning to be flexible when possible. All right, we'll come back to that and look at the code, but let's look at something else instead. first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to just write a new program that allows me to get input from the user and look at the various kinds of text. So I'll start with this. Let's just take and build some text here. And I'll say, please, ooh, gutter vomit, gotta love that. Enter your name. Let's make it a little bit smaller. Smaller would be smaller numbers, wouldn't it? Okay, please enter your name. This is the kind of text we've done all along. Agreed? Now, I can run this. Can I select that text?
No.
No. Can I change that text? No. Can the program change that text? No. It's really a graphic. You're right. It's just a picture. Now, let's build another place where we can actually type the name in. So now I've made another text area. Now, how do I make it so the user can type it in? Well, look down here at the properties. The default property for text is called static text. Static means it doesn't change. It doesn't change. Dynamic means it does change. And input means the user can change it. I'm going to go to input text for now. All right? So I'm going to input text. And let's take a look at the other characteristics and see what it's doing for us. Notice that it now gives us an opportunity to give it an instance name. We won't worry about that right yet. It changed some other things. Here, I'm going to switch it back and forth from static to input. And can you tell that static text and input text have different values associated with them? They have different properties. We can change different things about them. Well, in input text, we also generally have some other characteristics visually about them. Let's go ahead and run this and see. Oh, I thought I did that. There we go. Now, notice how I've got things set up. This is static text. Please enter your name. Can't select it. Can't change it. Here is input text. What's different about it? When I move the mouse over it, what happens? I get the I-beam, I can click on it, I get that little blinky thing, which tells me, because I'm a good little operant conditioned white rat who's been taught how to use these programs, what? I can type here. Oh yes, I type here, and please give me some cheese. cheese. So I can type in cheese there, and I can do whatever I've been told because I'm a good little user interface user. Usability is all about making sure that you follow those blind assumptions that you've drilled into people's heads before. I'm a little bitter about that, but that's okay. That's right. Alt F4 means quit because Bill Gates decided it should way back when he wrote the first version of Edit for BASIC. That's why Alt F4 means quit still. Huh? But it's the law now. So please enter your name. Now this acts differently. Yes? And it usually looks differently too. Why? All right. Immediately after I make fun of usability experts, now I'm going to tell you they're right. We do want to conform to the user's expectations most of the time because it makes our life easier. We like things that make us look smart, right? Somehow we have to give the user some sort of clue that this is a place they can type information in. One good thing would be to have static text that says, please enter your name here, dodo head. Imply the dodo head. Or not, I don't know. And then the other things, notice that usually input text has a line around it. Usually you put a border around input text. A lot of times if you have, let's say I change the background color of my overall stage, so let's give it a strange background color. I'll normally leave input text with a white background, black text, with black line around it. Something like that that makes it easy for the user to see, hey, I ought to be able to type something in here. Make sense? It's kind of like clicking on the squirrel. You got to give them some sort of clue to what they're supposed to do, or there's no way they're going to listen to you. Yeah? So please enter your name. My name is Cheesehead. Now, it doesn't really do anything, does it? No, we want it to do something. And how are we going to make it do something? Here's the interesting thing. You got to have buttons or something in order to get information in. So let's make a really simple button. Okay, that's ugly. So I'll give it a better fill color than that. Hey, if I'm doing nasty design. Double click on the interior. Change the fill color. Now let's try it. Ugh, can't deal with that. Alright. So is that a button yet? No. How do I make it a button? Select it, right click, and convert to symbol, or F8, if that's the way you like to do things. Convert it to a button, give it a good name, like my button. Export for ActionScript, because that's what Andy told us to do. Now, should we put some text on the button? Yeah, normally I lay it on top. I don't put it directly into the button just because it's easier to just lay it on top in Flash. But why would we do that? Right, yeah. We want to put some text on it so the user has some clue what's going to happen when they click on it, right? You know, end the world or whatever. Launch the missiles at Moscow. Better change the color so it stands out. Yeah, launch missiles is pretty good. Let's say click here. What's wrong? Well, it's ugly, but it's worse than ugly. It's input text, so the user can change the text that's on the button. Is that what we intended? Oh, it's worse than that. I'm not trying to change the text here. I'm just trying to click the stinking button. Excuse me. Whew. Hold something there. Okay, so, yeah, I don't want input text there. That's not good at all, because not only does it do something I don't really want to do, allow the user to change the text on the button, it prevents me from doing what I do want to do, which is let them click on the button. So it's very important that your text on buttons is not input text, huh? Because that defeats the whole purpose of having text on the button. So let's get out of here, and we'll change it to dynamic. Yeah, I'll take the line out, and maybe I'll mess around with the background color. You can have text that looks exactly right. And it still won't work right. Now I can copy it. I mean, I can select it, but it's still not doing what I want it to do. I can't click on the button. So any text that you want to have static, you really need to specify as static. Does that make sense? Usually button text, it's a really easy way to tell that you're dealing with an amateur web developer. Or an amateur Flash programmer, they have dynamic text on their buttons. If I see a Flash game that I have to kind of sneak around to click on the parts of the button that doesn't have text on it, then I know I don't need that game. Because what else are they going to get wrong if they can't get that easy one right? It's amazing how often you'll see that mistake made. Okay, so now let's make this static text. It should be not doing those lines anymore. See why it's not doing those anymore. There, it doesn't. Pretty nice. That looks a lot better. It's now listed as static text. I can click on the text and it passes through to click the button. That's exactly what I want. So far, so good. Now, of course, the button doesn't do anything yet, but we can fix that. We'll fix that soon. Let's make the button do something. How?
Name the button.
First thing, name the button. Notice what happened here. I clicked, and it says properties mixed. What is selected right now? Lots of things. Do I want lots of things selected? No, I only want the button. So click outside of things, click only on the button. Let's name it because we're going to attach code to it. When should you name something? Well, when it's this button. Yeah, but when else? If you're going to attach code to it or refer to it in code, it needs a name. That's pretty sensible, huh? Right. Anything that's going to do anything, if you bother to make it, you should probably give it a name. Because usually you're going to refer to it in code. That's all we're going to do in Flash, is use code to manipulate things. So most things we create, we will name as well. My button. Now I want to attach code to it. Best way to do that is what? Ooh, you didn't know there'd be a quiz so soon. Click on Frame 1, Layer 1. Pull up the Actions window. F9 is the quick key for that, or use the menu commands, whatever. Actions are important enough. I like them in their own window. You don't have to do it that way. Okay, give me some code. My button, I think. Let's find out. My button. My button dot on release. Yeah, I don't have any other frames here yet, so I'm okay with that. Actually, I would prefer you said gets than equals here. Why? Yeah. I left that on the chalkboard once in a class that was used by other folks, and I got an angry email from a math teacher. See, what is this, a new math? Yeah. And from math point of view, x equals x plus 1, what does that mean?
The answer of the end of all humanity.
The end of all humanity, we're flying close to a black hole because the laws of space and time have broken down. There's an old joke in calculus classes that, 1 plus 1 equals 3 for extremely large values of 1. If you take enough calculus, it starts to make sense. That's a scary thing. X equals X plus 1 from a mathematical point of view makes no sense, does it? Yet, in programming, we use something like this all the time because we're not saying X is equal to X plus 1. We're saying take the variable X and assign to it the previous value of X plus 1 more. So, single equals in the C-like languages, I read as gets. There is a place where we'll say equals. We'll wait till we get to conditions on that. Okie doke. Which will be later this chapter. So we will do conditions, but not today. Okie doke? Double equal is equal to. Single equal we read as gets. At least in the C-like languages. Okay. So, my button dot on release gets function. And for now, let's just do this. Trace. Why trace? It's the easiest thing I can think of. Hey, the button works. Might as well establish that before we do anything else, huh? It's amazing how often experienced programmers don't do this. You write 25 lines of code, 50 lines of code, 5 pages of code, and then you decide to test it. And smoke comes out of the back of the monitor. Why is that not such a good idea? It does damage to the walls. The smoke detector goes off. Every time the smoke detector goes off in my house, the kids yell, "Dinner's done!" Yeah. I don't know where they learned that. Oh, yeah, that's it. Except we homeschool, so I don't know. They learned that at school, honey. I don't know what. They didn't get that from me. What happens is that you don't know what are those 500 lines of code you just wrote messed up. Now, if I test this, it might work, it might not. But if it doesn't work, how many lines of code am I suspicious of?
Three.
Because there's only three. One of them's a comment, for crying out loud. So my chances of fixing it are pretty good. And I don't want to build new stuff on something that's already broken, right? Let's make sure that's working before we do anything else. I'm amazed how few of you will do this. Make me wrong this time. Make this the first class ever that doesn't do that. That doesn't ask me a question about code that's got like 75 errors in it, and I say, well, when was the last time you had a version of it that was working? And you could say, a week from Tuesday. It's so much easier if you check a lot. Why do you not like checking? Because it's going to tell you you're stupid. You're going to have, it takes extra keystrokes. Does it really? No. You don't want to have to deal with it saying that your code is bad. So you put that off. Put it off as long as you want. If the code is bad, the code is still bad. Better to find out often and early so that you don't make that same mistake 600 times, yeah? Nobody else knows that it's not working but you. You're in a room by yourself with your bunny slippers on. Well, I am. Nobody has to know that I made this mistake. Let me fix it now and then build the rest of the code on something that works. Make sense? Really good idea. So far, it's looking good. Please enter your name, Coco the Gorilla. Click here. Hey, the button works. I'm so excited. Little hamster dance moment. You got to give yourself those. You got plenty of opportunities to smack yourself upside the head in programming, right? You got to give yourself the moments to be happy. That's, again, why you should test frequently. Yeah? Little hamster dance moment. Yay! Now I'm separating my problems. First of all, I just want to say, can I make a button work, for crying out loud? Now I know I can make the button work. What's the next step? Somehow I can get information from this text box and spit it back out. That would be useful, huh? Couple of ways to do that. Here's the easiest. Now we're going into something that's unique to Flash. I've never seen this in any other language. But it's kind of cool. Once I've designated a text box as input or dynamic, and this one's input, then I've got this new thing called var. And what that means is I can associate a variable directly with that text box. So let's put a variable called username. Why am I not calling the variable name? It's way too common. There's probably something built into Flash called name, and I'm going to end up writing some crazy sentence like the name of the name variable is name, which is named name. So I never use name as the name of something because I get too confused. Let's call it username. That's much better. Now, I just attach username in this thing called var down there. You see that? It's part of the properties that shows up when I've selected an input text box. Now look what I can do to the code. Rather than simply tracing, hey, the button works, let's do this. We'll trace, hi there, comma space, plus username. Now, what is that going to do? So trace, parenth, quote, hi there, comma, space, end quote, plus username, end parenth, semicolon. That won't do anything? Concatenate. Oh, baby. Don't we have to do some sort of variable assignment? We're good little JavaScript programmers. We know that's a part of it. Let's try it and see. Please enter your name, Coco the Gorilla. Coco. Click here. Of course, Coco says her name like this. Click your name. That won't work on the podcast, will it? It's all right. One of so many things. Hi there, Coco. Okay. Help me out with your cognitive dissonance here. What's going on? You know from your previous studies that you have to assign a value to a variable from the text box. What happened here?
Even though you create a variable with a var, you don't have to
Flash got this really nifty thing going on. When you associate a variable with a particular text box, it automatically looks every frame at the contents of that text box and updates the variable directly. That's pretty slick. And it works both ways. So if I copy some value over to a variable, it changes the text box on the fly. If the user changes the text box, it changes the content of the variable. There's a direct linkage between the variable and the text box. It's like an alias, but it's not quite the same because they aren't the same thing. They're a linkage. It's more like a tunnel than an alias because there's an automatic linkage between this variable, which is one thing, and this text box, which is something else but related. Sort of, but it's more intimate than a linked list. Yeah, what could be more intimate than a linked list? That's what you're thinking. Yeah, that Valentine's Day data structures class. All right, so why do I think of these things? I'm sick. All right, so what happens is because we have this variable username associated with this text box, I can refer to that variable and it will automatically look for that text box to be linked to it. Pretty cool, huh? Let's try it again. Please enter your name, George. George, George of the Jungle. Click. Hi there, George. That's really cool. Now, if that just makes you nervous and you can't handle it, let's try it, Wilma. Okay, hi there, Wilma. How come it still says hi there, George, too? Yeah, the output window is non-destructive, so it keeps a track of all the stuff. That's actually good. We use that sometimes to keep track of what's happened over time. So that's working. Now, if that's really freaking you out, we could do it this way instead. We could call this whole thing TXT username. Those of you who've done Visual Basic would think of it more like this. TXT username is the name of this text box, and it has a property called, I think, text. We'll find out. Well, I never use it that way because I don't have to. Comment this out, and we'll say trace hi there plus TXT username dot text. Looking promising. Oh, yeah, sure. So if you prefer the Visual Basic way of thinking, the Java way of thinking, this is kind of like that. That's fine. There's times that's advantageous. So you think of naming the object and then extracting its text property. Or you can assign a variable directly to it, and simply by updating the variable, you update the element on the screen. Yes?
Can I go a little bit deeper into that?
Sure.
As far as accessing properties of items, can you access any property without methods?
Yes.
You just have to know the property's name.
Right. Those of you who are not object-oriented programmers, whoosh, it's okay. We'll get there. Okie doke? Yeah, and I don't like the way you do that. I wish you had more access methods. When we get to that rant towards the end of the semester. Nope. Everything's public. Okay, let's finish this thing out. Because, of course, our end users aren't really going to care what we put in the message box. We want to be able to display something onto the screen for them, right? That's what the third type of text is for. That's what the dynamic text box is about. That's a really bad idea. Why is that a bad idea? That belongs to the user. You shouldn't mess around with their input area. You should let them input stuff on a place and you should output it in another place. There's no good reason to mess around with their input text. It's one of my pet peeves in HTML. People use input boxes for output text. Now, in straight HTML, before we had DHTML and CSS, you pretty much had to do that. there's not a good reason for that anymore. It just confuses the user without buying you anything. I'm all for confusing the user if I have a good reason to do it. But I don't see it there. Let's go to dynamic text. Now this time I'm going to say, I'm going to call this one out, associate it with a variable called output. Okay? Now let's go back to the code. And I'm going to change it back a little bit just to keep it consistent. So trace, hi there, username, that's fine, there's nothing wrong with that, but now take a look at this. Output gets, hi there, concat username. Whoa, concat, I'm sorry, plus username. We'll come back to concatenation. Output gets hi there plus username. What's going to happen? I will have a variable. Well, it might say Coco if that's what I type in again. I will have a variable called output, which is automatically associated with this dynamic text box, right? I also have a variable called username associated with the input text box. So what should happen is it will use that input text box, username, to grab some information from the user, and then it'll do some calculations on it. It'll just combine these two text elements and copy that value out to this other variable called output. The output variable is connected to this dynamic text area, and so it will output that value, we hope. I'm going to make it a little bit longer because I think I'm going to need a little longer. And let's try it. Why don't you want to do some modification of this? Change the background. Take that out. We'll see how it works. Oh, it's not there. It is. You just can't see it. Coco, click there. Hi there, Coco. Cool. We often want dynamic text to be invisible. Why? Doesn't need to be anything there yet. We wait until we got something there. Now, when will you most often use this in game programming? You'll use static text for instructions and the title of your game, your headers, and that sort of stuff. You use dynamic text mainly for two things, debugging and scorekeeping. So most of the time in your arcade games, you're going to have, I don't know, a dynamic text element associated with the player score and the opponent score, or the points and the number of lives, or something like that. Make sense?
Can you leave your little trace stuff in there, or do you need to clean it up before you...
Oh, I can leave it here, and I often do. Because once I put this out in a Swift file, is this going to hurt anybody?
No.
No, they won't even know it's there. They can't know it's there. But the next time I load it up into Flash, I'll still see it again. Now, this is not that important, but a lot of times what I'll do here, as you'll see, is I'll put code there to tell me what's going on. So, like, I'm doing a thing later on where I'm calculating the new X and Y of an object based on its current speed and position, okay, and the direction it's going. Well, there's a pretty complicated calculation there, and to make sure it's going right, I'll print that into this output statement, into this little area here. So I can tell what's going on. If something's going wrong, I want to be able to see that, but the end user doesn't care. They just need to see the spaceship flying around the screen. So a lot of times I'll use this for debugging code and just leave it there. Surprisingly, there's tons, much commercial software has that kind of code already in it and left there. And so there's comments spitting stuff out to various consoles and logs, you know, in games and programs that you're running now that you don't know about. Yeah, if you look for it and you know where to look, then you can often find it. It can be quite humorous, but sometimes it can make you mad.
Do they actually run that for, like, a console game?
Oh, sure. You know, console games have a console. There's actually a place where it's sending messages. You mean like a PlayStation game or something? Yeah, they often have log files where a standard error or standard output is all being redirected to a log file somewhere. Now, usually by the time a console game is set up. I mean, it's hardwired into the CD-ROM, and so it's not going to change. But it's certainly they can, and certainly during the beta stages, it's doing a lot of that. If you beta test a game, it will always be slower than the original because it's creating a huge log file of what went wrong and where you went and what you were doing. And so every time you do something, it's storing stuff in a big text file somewhere. And if you've, has anybody beta tested a game? So they usually, at the end of that process, they either have a program that goes and extracts that program from your drive and sends it back to them, or they ask you to mail it to them. Did they do that? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, a lot of times, even if you don't crash it, they look for that file or they have you install a program on your machine that will automatically send that back to them. So they can tell what you did and how you went through things and what crashed and what didn't. And if you got it to crash, what were the things that happened beforehand? And they can use all that to prevent that sort of crash. That's the theory. And that's doing a lot of the same sort of stuff. Beta testing is a lot of fun, but it's a quick way to realize that you get sick of a game. You get paid. When you get paid to play it, you can get sick of it in a hurry. Remarkable how turning it in fun into work makes it no more fun anymore. Okay, does this make sense? You okay with this? This is a pretty neat idea. So, three kinds of text, they are? Static, dynamic, and input. Who can change static text? Nobody except the programmer in design time, which is where we are in Flash. Who can change dynamic text? The program, but not the user. Who can change input text? The user or the program. So it's pretty important to see the distinction. What's this nifty var thing about? It associates a variable to a particular kind of text box. You guys are so good. One more thing you may run across, if you want to have a multi-line text box, you just select it here, single line, multi-line, or multi-line, no wrap. They are the same object. The same text box actually has lots of different moods in Flash, and so you set these parameters to determine whether it's a multi-line text box or a single-line text box. Yeah. There's also another specialized component they sometimes use for that too. But multi-line, I think you can specify if there's a scroll bar on it too. I'd avoid it if you can. Well, on a Flash game, if you have scrolling text, it's probably too much text. I mean, that's not what Flash games are about. You should think of another way to do it. Maybe multiple pages, or maybe you should be doing something else. I think having lots and lots of text in a Flash game can be distracting. I'll show you a good one of my students did. Even though the game is interesting, there's too much text on it. That's the comment we get back from everybody. Okay. Make sense? Everybody okay with this? Yes. What do you mean next? That can be a part of it, but when you start doing that, so the question is when I'm dealing with going outside of Flash, I'm going to build a text file to store stuff in, or I'm going to make an XML thing, or I'm going to talk to a server or something, do I use the var? Well, sure, I'll use that as part of it, but the whole process is much more complex than that. And so when we get to that, we'll talk about it. Sure, the var is a part of it, but I'm going to get specific. No, it's a variable, it's a variable, it's a variable. Yeah, but I'll need a much larger variable usually than what I'm going to get out of this box. I'll usually, if I'm doing that, I'm getting information from three or four places on the text screen, plus maybe I'm doing some other stuff, and then I'm using all that stuff to build, you know, maybe an XML document that I'm passing out to the other program. And then I'll have to have another server-side program, usually I use PHP, doesn't matter what, that can receive that information and do stuff with it. Flash can really do very, very little with text files. normally you'll connect to some other language to do that work. At least the way we're doing it. So, does that help you, sort of? It was a non-answer, I'm aware of that.
So, it's something that I found out. You mentioned that input text can also receive input from the computer.
Sure.
From the program. That was a very useful thing on one of the games.
Yeah, you could use that to give it default values. You would use that to give a default value to the user. You wouldn't use that as a way to give instructions to the user. Because you don't want to give the user instructions like, whatever you do, do not press a W. And the first thing that they do is they start to type and they say, now what was that I wasn't supposed to type? You see, because the process of changing the data eliminates the instructions. And so you really shouldn't give the user instructions there. If you want to put something there, it should be a suggested default value. Does that make sense?
Or please enter text here.
I don't even like that. You should have a label up here that says, please enter text below. You don't really need to have text that's replaced, because if it's replaced, that meant it wasn't that important. If it wasn't that important, why was it there? Even if you have, please enter text here, what happens the second time somebody goes there and it doesn't say, please enter text here? How do they know they're supposed to enter text there? They don't. That's why you need to have it all outside somewhere. So far, so good? Okay.
I'm asking for
the legitimate questions. Oh, I love your legitimate questions. Keep going. Yeah, that's great. Okay, let's see what else. Mm-hmm. Okay, watch this. I'm going to show you some new math. I'm at the add bad program. Okay, 3 and 5. What's that going to give us? 53 or 35? 35. Wait a minute.
It's good math.
It is good math. Okay, we got to talk about variable types a little bit. There's the code. The code looks very sensible, doesn't it? Button add, that's this button. On release gets function. Sum gets x plus y. You can probably figure it out. There's a variable associated with this box called? There's a variable associated with that box called? And this box is a dynamic text element associated with sum. The sum of x and y. Okay, that's pretty sensible, huh? Sum gets x plus y. Well, why didn't it work? Strings. What do you mean strings? Anybody know why computer programmers never say text, we say strings instead? Yeah, the data structure in memory, what it does is it stores, usually, let's go old school ASCII, an 8-bit character, so an 8-bit binary code for every character. And so unlike numbers, which you always know if it's an integer, it's going to take up 2, 4, or 8 bits. You know how many bits it's going to take based on your language. So you know how much memory it's going to take because all integers take the same amount of memory, whether it's 0 or 32,000. They take the same amount of memory. Can you buy that? Come take 301. I'll bore you to death with it. All real numbers, floating point numbers, take the same amount of memory, whatever their value is. Now there's multiple ways of encoding them, but they take the same amount of memory regardless of their values. So far so good? Text does not work that way. The amount of memory that text takes up depends entirely on the length of the text, the size of the text that's in there. Because rather than being able to say, well, a word always takes 5 or 10 bytes of memory, it takes roughly 1 byte per character. That's very roughly these days. Now it usually takes 2 bytes per character plus a padding. But let's not worry about that. The details don't matter. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's 1 byte per character. Cool? If you are storing the text, hello, how many bytes then does that take? Okay, the math gets much harder. Yeah. 5 or 6, something like that. Depending on whether you have a null terminated character, I don't care. All right, so far that's pretty easy, right? But if you have a longer thing, you know, hello, my name is Diego Montoya, that's going to be much longer. Thank you for getting that. Yes, you killed my father. You need a longer string, because then you have to say, you killed my father and now you must die. It takes a much longer Princess Bride. Go rent it. I've only seen that one a few times in relative terms. The length of memory, the amount of memory it takes to store the thing, depends on how long it is. And this relationship, each character is a separate place in contiguous memory cells, reminded the early programmers of beads on a string. And thus we get that poetic phrase, string, when I refer to text. And then you get the cool thing. If you say text, people might know what you're talking about. If you say string, people think you're cool. You know, girls dig it when you talk about strings and stuff. And, well, I don't know. Maybe you got to find the right girl. Yeah. So, text strings. We talk about strings. We're talking about text. Now, here's the problem. Text boxes. Stay with me here. Text boxes. What kind of information would they accept? Text string. Now, unlike a lot of languages, Flash is real loosey-goosey, easy-going about what kind of data goes where. Have you noticed that? If you've done some Java or C, you know those languages are real picky about when things are integers and when they are floating point and so on. 3 plus Visual Basic is not picky, please. 3 plus 2.1 in C means what? Nothing. Java's worse. 3 plus 2.1 in Java is you can't do that, you idiot. Now, Flash uses a special scheme. What it does is it tries to determine the type of data by its context. And so in this case, because this information is coming from a text box, what type of data does it assume it is? Text. Now, can you buy for now, if you've taken 301, you better, that text is stored in memory differently than numbers? The text 3 is stored differently than the number 3. Can you buy that? Still in binary, but we use a different scheme. So it is reading this in as quote 3 and quote 5, which are text values, not numeric values. Already we noticed that the plus sign can be used in more than one way. When we use the plus sign to say hello plus username, what did it do? It stuck those two things together, but once again, we can't say stuck text together because people would understand us. What do we say instead? String concatenation. Work that into your dinner conversation tonight. So what did you learn today? Oh, I was working on string concatenation. Oh, that sounds painful. Complicated idea, a name for an easy idea. Take two texts and smunch them together. That's string concatenation. When you use the plus sign on string text values, what does it do? Concatenates. Yeah? Now, what if I use the plus sign on numeric values? It adds them. This is confusing. It's called operator overloading. The plus sign has more than one job. Woohoo! Yes, C++ guy right there. Only a C++ person could love operator overloading. Oh, I hate it. I like the Perl approach. Plus sign never means concatenate. Plus sign means add. If you're going to have implicit variable declaration, don't have operator overloading. You shouldn't have both in the same language. Once again, they never asked me, so I guess it doesn't matter. Yeah? Not very well. So we can't do explicit typecasting and we have operator overloading. What that means, in a very geeky way of saying, don't trust stuff to be the type of thing you expect it to be. There must be a way to force it to say, hey, you idiot, that 3's a number. Let's take a look. And here it is, a better version of that same game. It's called parseInt. Parse just means convert text to something else. ParseInt x plus parseInt y. That says, hey, interpret x as an integer value, interpret y as an integer value. Now, by the time we get to this plus sign, What kind of values is it adding? Two integers. Hey, how could we get it to be a float instead? Parse float. Ooh, you're good. How could we force it to be a string? Well, there's not a parse string. There's a two string, but we almost never need it. Whenever you're getting user input from the screen, it's almost always already in string value. So usually if you have to convert it, you have to convert it to a numeric value to do math on it.
Why? If I used casting, int x, and it worked, I just got lucky, I guess.
Right. I mean, you can do typecasting, but it doesn't always work in Flash. So I don't require people to do it, since you still have to do this part to be sure. Because so let's say you typecast X, but then you associate it with the text box. Does this mean this text box now reads in only numeric values? No, you can still type text values into it. But then what numeric value do they get transferred over to? Usually zero. Ugh. So I don't really love that. Anyway, why do we care? Because we're going to be doing math. We're going to be writing a program that can do this math on this stuff. Does this make sense to you so far? Good. We're running out of time today. So what I want you to be able to do now, come out of this with the ability to build buttons, build an input box. You can get information from the user. Build a dynamic text box to send information out. Can you do that? Go forth and create ye such a thing. Just have some fun. Make something. You can get input. You can get output. You're sure you're comfortable with the three different kinds of text boxes, and you're sure you're comfortable with this variables being associated to text boxes. Cool? All right, you guys are wonderful. I'll see you.